This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. It's all very exciting here at Racing Post HQ. It's time for the World Cup and we've got you covered from every possible angle. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings today. Mark, I was going to say, you're bored of talking about the World Cup now because you've done pullouts, you've done videos, but knowing you, you're more ready than ever.
Absolutely, Jack. I know for the general kind of football fan, this World Cup's almost been sprung upon them, and there's probably less excitement around it than what you'd normally get for a summer one, where you have that month build up before the tournament starts or whatever. But at sort of Racing Post HQ, we have been in sort of really knee deep in World Cup for a while, so I'm at sort of fever pitch now. There are concerns and question marks to be had about various aspects of the tournament, but I don't think we can let that completely dominate. How can you say to Welsh fans that you can't be as excited about this World Cup because it's not like the one staged at Italia 90 or in Germany in 2006? I just find that hard to believe. Of course, most people would rather it be played in the summer and rather be played somewhere other than Qatar for pretty obvious reasons. But it is where it is, and you're still going to get memories. It's a World Cup. There are always memories that come from a World Cup. Even World Cups when I wasn't alive, before I was born, they're still just etched in my memory, whether it's Carlos Alberto's goal or Paolo Rossi's celebration. You just can't get away from it. It's the most wonderful time of the year, never mind Christmas.
Absolutely. And it kind of ties in with the lovely intro you wrote in this year's World Cup betting guide that was in today's Racing Post. Now, I assume those listening to the podcast may have missed their chance to buy the physical copy if they haven't already, but fear not, I'm going to include the link to purchase the PDF version in the description of this podcast. So wherever you're listening, if you do want to get the 80-page betting guide, which I must say, and I probably have to say this, but I'm going to, I'd say it anyway, is a really wonderful publication. I know Mark was heavily involved, a lot of the other guys on the Racing Post Sport there. So we're going to go in depth on this podcast, but in terms of just real information, try and pick up that. You won't regret it. I think it's £4 for the PDF version, so an absolute steal. Mark, let's touch on the outright market first. We're going to get into some of the individual games later on in the show and kind of give people previews and predictions for the first sort of week of games until our next episode of Bets Club. But everyone will be interested on the outright market. I know that kind of prices have changed considerably since we first spoke about it about 6 months ago now. So where are you at with things now?
Yeah, so anyone that listens to Bets Club regularly, and talking of that, I bumped into a Kieran, a Bets Club listener at Tottenham last week, came up, said hello. So hello back to Kieran. And then I was getting a sandwich from Pret a Manger the other day in the office. Humble brag. And a guy just shouted out my name. I turned around, I think I don't recognize him, but you don't want to be unkind. And then he just come over, we shook hands, he said how much he liked the podcast. So yeah, those that have been listening for all that time will remember me talking about Argentina. And maybe people will be surprised if they've looked at the pullout, they're saying I've not gone for Argentina. But the price is, in some cases, it's halved. And they're the same team. And I think at sort of 5-1, 6-1, I can just leave them alone. I respect them and Brazil. I think they are the two most likely winners. But the European teams have done very well in recent World Cups, dominated the last one as well. And at the odds, I just thought Netherlands would give you a good run for your money. Nice draw, not anticipating any problems really until the quarterfinal stage. And then who knows, once you're in the World Cup at that kind of level, it's really up for grabs, isn't it? And just looked at the team, strong defensively to the point where Matthijs de Ligt doesn't start for them. In midfield, I think Frankie de Jong, wonderful footballer. And up front, Memphis probably won't start the opening game, but once Depay is up front for the business end of the competition, you've got a really sort of strong spine from which to build the team around. Louis van Gaal is a coach that is, you know, definitely experienced. He won knockout competitions in Holland, in Germany, in England, in Spain. He's also won the Champions League and the UEFA Cup. So this is somebody that knows how to win. Took a Dutch team that wasn't fancied at all to the semi-finals of a World Cup. Do you remember they beat Spain, didn't they? 5-1 in that opening game, and then made it all the way to the semi-finals. So I respect sort of his CV. And I just got them in a bundle of European teams that could go well. And that includes Spain, Germany, Portugal, even England. And then just at sort of 14-1 with a draw they've got, that's how I sort of ended up on them. In terms of sort of more sort of bigger prices, you can't rule out Denmark, semi-finalists at the last Euros, qualified well, beat France twice already this year, and have got Eriksen back playing at a high level. And even bigger prices would be Uruguay. I actually think if they can beat Portugal to top spot and get the easier half of the draw, they could become big runners. Valverde and Bentancur in midfield, really like both of those. In defence, all play at high level. Araujo plays for Barcelona. You've got Jimenez, Atletico Madrid, a couple of different options in terms of the left-back, both play in Italy. And one of our favourite players, Darwin Nunez, Jack.
Yes. Know he's
ultimate chaos. We're not after him. We don't need him to play well for 6 months. We just need him to play well for six games. I think he's capable of doing that for sure.
I think the joy of this World Cup is having read through a lot of the kind of best bets from a lot of very shrewd judges on the Racing Post sport desk. It feels as if kind of the top seven in the market are all fancy. This feels wide open. And it did catch my eye, Mark, that Didi Haman, who's got a bit of a column in the pullout, he's put up Serbia, a bit of an outside chance at 100-1. Did that surprise you?
It didn't overly surprise me, because my colleague and Bets Club regular Dan Childs also thinks that they can really outperform their odds.
Wow.
Now,
okay.
You know, they're 100-1 for a reason, but you look at the front two, Mitrovic and Vlahovic, Tadic in behind them, Kostic can put a good ball in off the left, Milenkovic, Savic in midfield, you know, highly rated at Lazio. So it doesn't massively surprise me that they're considered dark horses. I don't like their group. Cameroon are the rank outsiders in that group, but Anguissa in midfield is a wonderful player for Napoli. Choupo-Moting, red hot form for Bayern Munich, and I don't say that in jest. He's actually scoring a lot of goals for them now. And I personally prefer Switzerland just because of their efficiency to get the job done. And you're probably only playing for one spot, because I don't see tournament favourites Brazil crashing out early. Vinicius, Neymar, Rafinha, Richarlison, Gabriel Jesus up front, Militao, Thiago Silva, Marquinhos at the back, Alisson in goal, Ederson, if anything happens to Alisson. A lot of quality in the tournament favourites. So I think Brazil will definitely take one of those two spots. And Serbia, in my opinion, have just got that battle on to finish second. But they've got talent, that's for sure.
Absolutely. No, well worth reading all of the sort of justifications for each team made very clear in the pullout. Let's take a look at the golden boot market, where Harry Kane's the favourite. You've got Mbappe, Benzema and Lionel Messi closely following. Mark, just before we get into who you fancy for this, it's worth making it very clear to the listener that kind of the markets are decided differently, aren't they, depending on which bookmaker you're using for this?
Yeah, so if they call it World Cup Golden Boot, that usually means, and you know, we've got William Hill, Betfair, Sportsbook, Paddy Power among them that go for the Golden Boot, which means if there is a tie at the top or for any of the places, they will revert to the Golden Boot rules, which is set by FIFA. So the count back is assists first and then minutes played. So the fewer the minutes, sort of, the higher up the ranking you'll go. Whereas some of the other bookmakers I've not mentioned, you know, Corals and Ladbrokes, Bet365, etc., they are going on top goal scorer, which is the more traditional way of doing it. And it's, you know, the usual dead heat rules apply if there's more than one player sort of finishing top in terms of you know, the top marksman at the competition. I think it is important. I personally would go for Messi to win the Golden Boot. And I'm saying specifically the Golden Boot because I would go to that Golden Boot market because, you know, he's an assist king as well. But Argentina's price has collapsed in terms of the outright, but Messi's price has held firm in the Golden Boot. And to me, they go hand in hand. Messi has a good tournament. Argentina have a good tournament. And I couldn't put anybody off. If you do fancy Argentina to win the World Cup, a better way of doing it might be to back the Argentina, Lionel Messi. It's Argentina to win the World Cup. Lionel Messi, top goal scorer. It's about 40-1. And I think it's a fun bet and a better way of backing Argentina now. But yeah, Messi would be my best pick in the top goal scorer slash Golden Boot market. Another couple that might go well at prices. Vinicius Junior. He hasn't sort of always been in favour with Brazil, but they can't ignore him now. Just too good for Real Madrid. And our mate Nunez, who just has a lot of shots. And, you know, he's somebody that he's not the finished article yet, but he's a real threat. And, you know, he's certainly going to be having enough shots, I think, to win the Golden Boot. That's for sure.
Well, I was going to say, if there was a market for most shots in a tournament, he'd certainly win it. We'll get on to England very shortly, Mark. But Harry Kane is the favourite for the top goal scorer market. He, of course, was the top goal scorer in the last World Cup. Haven't seen too many people fancying him. What's the reason for that?
Well, I think the price more than anything else. I mean, he's favourite, but he's up against some, you know, you just went through them, didn't you? There, you know, Messi, Mbappe, Benzema, you got Neymar. I mean, you know, England are not a team that scores absolute hatful of goals usually. Looks to me to be a tight group, that Group B, with, and we'll get onto the games in a minute, but USA, Iran, Wales. It doesn't feel like there's, you know, Saudi Arabia, like, for instance, like what Messi's got, you know, knocking around. And so I think that is probably the main reason. I mean, in terms of his Premier League form, it's absolutely incredible that nobody's speaking about how well Harry Kane has done from a goal-scoring point of view, because Haaland has been tearing it up. The fact that Kane was second in that chart, just almost forgotten about because he's so far behind. But, you know, he's a regular source of goals, reliable from the spot, will take all of the penalties. He's got a fair chance, but I would say it's way more competitive than wanting to back the favourite in this market.
Well, Harry Kane will be leading the line for England. Let's talk about their opener now. Of course, it's England against Iran, this one Monday at 1 o'clock. 4-11 England, 10-1 Iran, 7-2 the draw. Mark, I was just thinking about this, sort of that afternoon game on a weekday. When you were at school, did they sort of wheel out the television if there are any games on at school? I recall watching us get knocked out by Brazil on one of those big chunky televisions back in the day.
Oh, you're bragging there, aren't you, about your youthfulness? I was in the pub for that for that 2002 game when lost to Brazil. Do you know, obviously England didn't qualify for USA 94 and the time zone would have been sort of later games anyway. I don't remember it for Italia 90. And again, I feel like I sort of, and it's hard to definitely place it, but I feel like England played a lot of night games at Italia 90. And then the worst one was, well, it was good because I was off school, but France 98 was when I did my GCSEs. You can imagine, how much effort I put into my GCSEs when there was the temptation of France 98. And I actually remember, because I had no interest in going to college or sort of further education. I was just looking for jobs, and I think I even had a job interview on the day when England beat Tunisia 2-0. I was certainly, or maybe it was one of the exams, I rushed home just in time for kickoff, and Des Lynam did that famous line about you know, you're supposed to be at work, and nobody was at work, everyone was watching France 98. But the TV, I feel like maybe Euro 88 when I was in primary school. Okay. Maybe.
There's a lovely kind of degree of nostalgia about that, isn't it? It's amazing with World Cups. You can just, you know, remember the smells and where you were of certain games.
Yeah, that's absolutely what I was sort of saying at the top there about how we can't let what's gone on by FIFA allow us to forget, you know, to not have memories of this World Cup, because you're right, it goes in 4 year periods.
Absolutely.
It probably shouldn't, but that's how I sort of run my life. I shouldn't do that, but I do.
I think that's a perfectly good way to live life, Mark. There's far worse things to be doing. Let's have a look then at this game, and it's a fascinating one, because I think when the groups were drawn, Iran was seen as the whipping boys, and the more we've learned and the more we've educated ourselves around Iran, we've learned that that's probably not the case. England are coming into this off the back of some really decent form in terms of these major tournaments, but recently haven't been performing well at all. I guess team selection is the interesting one from Gareth Southgate's point of view, Mark, both with defence and the forward line as well. How do you see it kind of panning out in terms of that starting 11?
Yeah, so Kyle Walker obviously going to miss that first game. Pickford will be in goal, I assume. You know, it'd be absolutely astonishing if it's not him in goal, given his loyalty, Southgate, towards him. I think there would be a case for playing Ramsdale, but it is what it is. I expect a back three. I would say it's hard because the defenders are they're either out of form, out of favour, or both. But I think it'll be John Stones, Eric Dyer, and Harry Maguire, maybe.
Would you say John Stones is kind of the only defender where you... not guarantee, but
trust,
most likely
trust him
to start. Yeah.
I mean, he definitely starts, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I think if he's picking Maguire in the squad, it means it's because he wants him to play, and he's going to sort of almost forget what happened at Manchester United and even with England. I would imagine that Trippier is the right wing back ahead of Alexander-Arnold. Luke Shaw hasn't got much competition over on that left-hand side. Bellingham and Rice feels like a natural combination, particularly with Calvin Phillips sort of still working his way back to fitness. Harry Kane obviously starts. Raheem Sterling, you could argue, shouldn't be in that team on club form, but you know, Southgate absolutely loves him, so he'll be on one side. The only, I suppose, the big call up front is Saka or Foden on the other.
Who would
wing.
You go with, Mark?
I'd go with both of them and not play Sterling. But I don't think that I don't think that Southgate would do that. If it's a straight choice between those two, I would go for Saka. I just, his dynamism, I think, is more suited to the way that Harry Kane plays, in that Kane likes to drop a little bit deeper, doesn't he? And then he feeds the sort of two quicker wide players. Saka's form for Arsenal, one of the reasons why they're top of the league at the moment. Such a difficult dribbler to stop. And I would say if Sterling's not playing at his top level, you want somebody that's able to beat a player. And Saka does that as well as most in the Premier League. So I think I would go, like I say, if it was my pick, I'd go Grealish and Saka. Because I adore Jack Grealish, think he's a wonderful player. But you know, he's way down the list. So I if it's out of Saka and Foden, I would go for Saka. I just think he's more suited to playing in the way that England wants to play than Foden, who wants to come towards the ball more than what Saka does.
Now, the thing that worries me with England, Mark, and you can either put me at ease or add to my woes, is I keep reading about England and I've watched it with my very eyes. We've struggled recently to score goals. And then on the flip side, you've got an Iran side who are apparently very well drilled defensively. So that's not the ideal matchup. Have England got what it takes to break through this Iran side?
They have. I would suspect that it'll have to be patience needed. With Carlos Queiroz's teams, when he was manager before at Iran, they time wasted a lot. And when he was manager of Egypt, they time wasted even more than that. So you will need patience. I think the bench could be really important. So, you know, we just spent a couple of minutes, should it be Saka? Should it be Foden? Maybe it's those off the bench. Maybe it's Foden and Grealish and Madison that can make a difference off the bench. Or Trent Alexander-Arnold comes on and can start putting good crosses in, maybe. I would fear Iran in some respects more than US and Wales. I actually think that Iran are a decent price to qualify from this group. And I think they are being underrated. in FIFA ranking terms, this is actually a harder group than a lot of people imagine. And I wouldn't be surprised if this was one of those sort of almost classic World Cup matches where the favourite eventually gets the job done, but it's not massively pretty. And there are more questions and answers that come out of sort of the, you know, the media in the days that follow up until the next game.
So Monday, 1 o'clock rolls around. What's the bet that we should all be having on this game?
I think there's no prices yet available, but I wouldn't mind sort of being on time of first goal, sort of over whatever the line comes out. It'll probably be sort of, you know, a good sort of 20, late 20s into around about the half an hour. Not expecting many goals in this game, but probably best bet will be England to win and under 3.5 goals.
There we go. Let's get on to some other games then. And of course, everything kicks off on Sunday at 4 o'clock. So I hope you're all going to be stuck in front of the television and ready for this one. It's Qatar against Ecuador. Now, not the glitz and glamour that we maybe would like from a World Cup opener, but still very excited nonetheless. How are we approaching this one, Mark?
With trepidation from a betting point of view, but I would edge towards Ecuador. It's hard to know. Qatar will feel like a club side. They've been in camp for a long time. This is a team, you know, this game feels like probably a decade in the making. You know, the coach was also managing the youth team set up. So they've been building for this moment. And usually these kind of whipping boy hosts don't tend to be as bad as what people imagined. You know, South Africa were competitive. US way back in 94 were competitive. Russia beat Saudi Arabia 5-0, didn't they? Four years ago. But I still look at them, and it's not necessarily a negative about Qatar. I think Ecuador are better than the market thinks. The young players, Caicedo at Brighton being one, and that there are three Brighton players within the ranks, have spent a lot of money on youth setups. And I just found it really interesting that Brazilian coach Tite was tipping them up at the World Cup draw, saying that they were dark horses to win the whole thing. They didn't need to say that, and I don't think they will win the lot. But ever since he said that, there's been something in my mind that's sort of been kind of looking at them with more respect, and I think they might be able to show it. Enner Valencia, the striker, still scoring goals, but I think it's more about these young players that are coming through and might just have a bit too much quality for Qatar.
Okay, let's go on to Monday's games then. We've already discussed the early kickoff, which is England against Iran. Let's take a look at Senegal against Netherlands. Now, I know Mark's very keen on the Netherlands. We haven't heard too much about Senegal, Mark, but looking at their lineup, there's some real quality in there. You've got Mendy, Sarr, Koulibaly, Gueye, and Jai, who I know has been doing very well at Sheffield United. Like, there's some talent in that Senegal side.
There is, but it's missing that magic man, Mane, isn't it? You know, he's going to miss they've only said the first games. We don't know what that means other than at least the first two matches.
A huge
blow. Solid. It's an absolutely huge blow. The talisman for the football team and the country in some respects. They will be solid still because you don't lose that with Koulibaly and Mendy and the other players that you mentioned. And AFCON, a lot of their games were low scoring. Netherlands likely to be without Memphis Depay for the opening game. He's not fully fit at the moment. So I think the Dutch maybe we'll have to be patient. And I'm going to use the P word quite a bit, I think, because these World Cup openers, there's not going to be loads of goals in, well, I say that definitely not, unlikely to be loads of goals in these World Cup opening matches. But, you know, it's that classic cliche, you don't want to lose the opener, blah, blah, blah. But we've just seen it before that they tend not to be amazing games. And the way I was looking at this from a bet was with Depay out, was to just back Netherlands to keep a clean sheet. Without Mane, I don't see where the Senegal goals are going to come from. I look at that Dutch side with Virgil van Dijk leading it, and the fact that De Ligt is not even likely to be in the starting 11, I think shows how good they are defensively. So, yeah, well, I'll go for a Dutch clean sheet.
Okay, Wales against USA up next, of course, in the same group as England and Iran. You said there, Mark, earlier that you'd maybe fancy Iran over the United States in terms of quality. We haven't spoken much about Wales. Obviously, Gareth Bale, the main man there. who's kind of been light on minutes recently. This is an intriguing opener for both sides.
Yeah, it is. It feels like a must not lose for both teams. So I do think it'll be quite a tight game. I'm going to go for USA draw, no bet. From a Welsh point of view, I think Rob Page has got the team punching above their weight. You know, they are more than some of their parts. Defend well and then look for something from Bale. And if Bale's to do anything, it probably will be early on in the tournament, because can he really play three matches in sort of 9-10 days anymore? I think the jury's out, isn't it, as to whether he can do that. Let's put it that way. Unless he really has just been saving himself. I mean, it'd be almost disgraceful if he suddenly comes back and is as fit as what he was sort of 6-7 years ago, given what he's done at his clubs. I just look at the US team and it looks quite good to me. I think the manager, unlike Page, probably doesn't get as much out of them. But when you see McKennie at Juventus, you know, Tyler Adams has played Champions League, Aronson, the American boy, as they sing, at Leeds. He's really skillful, a player I like a lot, actually. I think he definitely got more gears in him. And I think that's the issue for Wales. They're coming up against a US team that just looks to have sort of more youthfulness about it, probably a touch more quality. Wouldn't be amazed if it finished in a draw, but just from a safety point of view, I wouldn't mind having the draw, no bet on my side. And you also look at that US sort of someone like Carter Vickers. He's probably not going to be that scared about taking on Kiefer Moore. And that might be a problem for Wales throughout this tournament, because the English centre-backs are used to that type of sort of striker as well. And he is a throwback, isn't he, really? I'm not sure his kind of power is going to be as important in a game like this. And just look at the US team with, you know, Dest and Robinson as the fullbacks as well. Pulisic, a player that can do damage in the last third, almost as much as what Bale can. So I think if there is to be a winner, I'd edge towards the US, I think.
Okay, let's move on to Tuesday's games then. And this one at 10 a.m. So you might be watching it with a bowl of cornflakes, depending on what time you rise. It feels like the biggest difference in terms of quality. It's Argentina against Saudi Arabia. Mark, I was seeing the other day Saudi Arabia played a friendly against Croatia, only lost that game 1-0. So maybe not as bad as some are making out, but they're up against it here.
Yeah, well, the Croats picked virtually a reserve team for that first half at least. So, you know, I don't know how much to read into it. What we do know is that they've been in camp since October the 24th. So preparation shouldn't be a problem for Saudi Arabia. Hervé Renard, the hunky French boss that they've got, there's not going to be a better looking coach than Hervé Renard in the competition, that's for sure. Unfortunately, his team are nowhere near as attractive as what he is. So I think that there'll be a drab watch, but Argentina will, you know, this to me feels like a World Cup when you are watching Argentina with your cornflakes. And I appreciate that not everybody's fortunate enough to sort of work and be able to watch sport at the same time. And, that will be frustrating for people that have got jobs that they can't do that. Thankfully, all my meetings will be cancelled. I'm not going to.
I was going to say, are you rescheduling Zoom calls? I've seen a few cancelled meetings pop up in my emails, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to catch me on any calls. I don't know. You know, I'll be working, you know, otherwise engaged. And Argentina, I expect to really come flying out the traps here. Beat UAE 5-0 in a friendly on Wednesday. The firepower, Messi, Lautaro Martinez and Di Maria up front should be way too much for Saudi Arabia. That's all reflected in the odds. I just think maybe a couple of little correct score darts on 3-0 and 4-0 split the stakes might be the way to go. If you have a look at sort of Argentina in qualifying, they did only score 27 goals, which was 13 fewer than Brazil. But I'm expecting, come the World Cup, I'm expecting good things from them.
The more we talk about it, the more excited I get. I really am excited for this World Cup. I'm not particularly sure why. Denmark, Tunisia is the next game up. This is the 1 o'clock kickoff on Tuesday. I'm conscious we probably need to start speeding through these, Mark. We're just getting a bit over enthusiastic, aren't we? Denmark, I know it. You're very fond of the major tournaments we've previewed since we've worked together. Denmark's always been a fancy for you. Their opening game against Tunisia. Do you see them getting the job done here?
Yeah, I do. And this be another one of them sort of trademark World Cup openers where the better team eventually grinds down the weaker one. Saw a stat that in the Racing Post pull out, 8 of Tunisia's last 11 competitive games have featured no more than one goal. So God, I think we know what their style of play will be. Denmark to eventually break them down. So Denmark to win and under 3.5 goals.
Mexico, Poland. This is an intriguing one. 4 o'clock on Tuesday. I'd say from the games we've previewed so far, this feels like the tightest one. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely. You are right in saying that, Jack. And that's why I think the way to go is a draw. Because
we didn't even rehearse that.
No, but if you lose this game with, you know, Argentina to come, probably out of the tournament, and that's a really horrible place to be, isn't it? You know, to know so much is riding on that opening game. I think that Poland potentially are slightly better with Lewandowski and Zielinski, players like that in the team, but not by enough to have a strong opinion. So, yeah, a low-scoring draw.
So Tuesday has 4 games. The 7 o'clock game is France against Australia. France, yeah. the winners last time out, Mark. Still packed with quality, aren't they? It's that midfield that's a concern for them.
Yeah. You know, Pogba and N'Golo Kante, big misses, goes without saying. But they're not the only two because Varane's struggling for fitness. Benzema's not been training. And Nkunku was ruled out of the tournament on the eve of it after a tackle from Camavinga knocked him out. So I just think the French arrive with quite a few question marks over them at the moment. There's still so much talent, though. When you look at Mbappe and you know, if they can get Benzema, them two together, it might only need one of them to play well, and they can still go deep in the World Cup. Socceroos, I mean, I went through their squad list, and my God, it's lacking in quality, I think it's fair to say. We've had previous Aussie teams that have actually had some sort of European, if not elite players, certainly sort of ones that could hold their own at elite level. Don't see that this time around. Think France should win. I know there's a nervousness in France just about the fact that, you know, the players are not fit at the moment. And, or you know, you mentioned that midfield like Rabiot, and, you know, is Tchouaméni able to dominate a midfield like Pogba and Kante have? But this Australia, they should win the game. Mbappe's bigger than 3-1 to score the opening goal. With doubts over Benzema's fitness at the moment, I think that's the way to go.
Okay. Wednesday's fry-up will be served with a side dish of Morocco against Croatia. Now, we know all about Croatia. Morocco's headline in the Racing Post pullout is off-field upheaval, leaves questions to be answered. Do you want to answer those questions now, Mark?
Yeah, so they sacked their coach and got rid of Ali Odzic and brought in a domestic-based coach, the first Moroccan to lead the team since 2016. So that's where the upheaval is. I think it might be to a strength, though, because there are a couple of players, Mazraoui of Bayern Munich and Ziyech of Chelsea, fell out with the previous coach. So you get them to back into that team. Hakimi plays for Paris Saint-Germain, an absolutely sensational right wing back. Then Bonu, the goalkeeper, plays for Sevilla. El Nezeri up front plays for Syria. Amrabat in midfield, solid anchor man for Fiorentina. Buffao, might remember him when he was in the Premier League. Not consistent, but magic in his boots occasionally for Angers. You could say the same about a chair, couldn't you, at QPR? Mm. He's somebody that he could put himself in the shop window, maybe. I think here there might be a bit of an upset. I haven't gone for many upsets so far, but Croatia, it's not a lack of respect, really, around Croatia. I mean, you have to respect a team that's got Modric in it, Garvidal, the centre-half, very highly rated at Leipzig. But I just look at that Morocco team and think that they're better than the odds suggest. That Agurd, who hasn't played much for West Ham, they spent a lot of money on him, though, the centre-half as well. So I think Morocco are better than the odds suggest. I'm going to go for them or draw a double chance against Croatia.
Superb. I've just, as I'm sure you can hear, Mark, on the audio, I'm flicking through the pull. I see there's a wall chart in the middle. Are you still fond of a wall chart?
Love a wall chart. Yeah, I mean, how can you not love a wall chart? We have one posted through our letterbox yesterday, sort of part of like a council sort of thing. I don't know. It's only a small one in the middle. Oh. I was eating lunch. My wife came in. She was flicking through it, and she's looking at the wall chart, and she said to me with a straight face, "Oh, did you know Germany and Spain are in the same group?" What do you think I've been doing for the last like 3 months? Can you honestly see a situation where I didn't know that Spain and Germany were in the same group? But I didn't say that. I just went, oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, just one of the quirks of the draw and moved on.
I would love to know what your wife thinks you kind of do on a day-to-day basis. I think what she thinks you do compared to what you actually do are two very different things.
Yeah, that would be right. And goodness knows what the kids think I do.
Well, Germany are the team we're talking about next. This game, 1 o'clock on Wednesday. This feels very World Cup-y, this game, if you know what I mean. Germany against Japan, Mark.
Yeah, and we've gone for a lot of low-scoring games so far and draw no bets and draws and wins and under the goals. This one, I'm expecting fun. So if you are at work, maybe at least sneak off for your lunch break, watch the first half or the second half of this one. But Germany got goals in them, no doubt about that. It doesn't matter so much they haven't got a striker. Musiala, Thomas Müller, Serge Gnabry, Kai Havertz, Sané, Gundogan, Joshua Kimmich. These are all players that can score goals. I expect them to share the goals around rather than have somebody that goes on to win the golden boot. But under Hansi Flick, you'll remember Hansi Flick when he was coach at Bayern Munich and won the treble. They were such an aggressive team, wanting to press and defend on the halfway line. They leave space in behind. That you know, crazy, wasn't it? In the Nations League, the 3-3 draw with England at Wembley. Yeah. I think Germany to win and both teams to score is the way to go here. What I like about Japan is what they've got in the forward areas as well. Kamada, the Eintracht Frankfurt player, is skillful. Saw a fair bit of him in the Champions League. And one I'm going to give a shout out to, if you want to back him to be top Japanese scorer, couldn't put you off. And that's Mitoma at Brighton. I'd literally never heard of him until sort of recently. And
superb, isn't he?
He's such a threat. He's a crazy threat. Yeah. So he's a player I like a lot.
Brilliant. No, looking forward to that. Wednesday looks like a great day of football. The 4 o'clock game, Spain against Costa Rica. Mark, I'm probably on my own here, but I think because a lot of the chat in the lead up to this tournament has been around Argentina and Brazil and the issues that England maybe face or don't face. We've I've certainly overlooked Spain, and having read through bits and bobs over the last couple of days, you go, no, they are still a serious, serious contender for this tournament, and they open up against Costa Rica.
Yeah, so I think we sort of done a bets club after the Euros, and you said who's going to win the World Cup, who's likely to be your tip. I think Spain would have been the most likely because they were the best team at the Euros, in my opinion. And they had young players like Pedri that were just ready to train on and go on to superstardom. And I think that Pedri is just an amazing player. And you've got Gavi as well at Barcelona. Will it be an all Barcelona midfield? Possibly with Busquets as well. I just think there are like Alba's probably not the player that he once was. Busquets maybe not. In the fullback area, Azpilicueta or Carvajal, I'd have slight doubts about them. And then up front, just who scores the goals? Like, you know, a lot will be asked of Morata. I'm not a huge fan of Morata. I just think he misses too many chances. I'd probably edge towards Spain to win the group, and I think they'll beat Costa Rica. I was going to say comfortably enough, but because they don't sort of make the most of their chances, that might be another game where it's a grind. So Spain to win. And under 3.5 goals against a Costa Rica team that you look at their probable lineup. I mean, it's still got Joel Campbell in it. He's got 118 caps. Borges has got 150.
Is that right?
Well, Borges has got 154 caps. Brian Ruiz has got 144. Keylor Navas, 107. It's a mad team. I'm glad they've made it through to the World Cup. It feels good that a team like Costa Rica are in it. Of course, you know, they reached the quarterfinals, didn't they? In that mad World Cup a couple of times go and caused England problems and a number of other teams. Unfortunately, their best days look to be behind them. Sure, they'll keep it respectable against Spain, but probably lose.
That's brilliant. You probably know this off the top of your head, Mark, because you're an encyclopedia, but there can't be too many national teams with four players in the squad with over 100 caps, can
they? Uruguay. When we get to Uruguay, okay. They've got a lot of centurions.
Fine. Let's have a look at the Wednesday game, then Belgium against Canada. Now, I was going through some stats of Mark Langdon's Bets Club the other day, Mark, and I saw that 4% of our listeners are from Canada. Now, is it time for them to tune out? Because I can't imagine you're going to be too sweet on them after hearing some of the things you were saying on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that they're going to struggle in this group. It's more a case, I think they're slightly overrated in the markets because they've got Alfonso Davies and they've got Jonathan David. It feels to me like people are expecting a little bit too much of Canada. And if you actually look at the rest of the team, how can we be kind? Say it's not
you
that
don't
strong.
Have to be kind.
No,
just be honest.
I just don't think it's very strong. I mean, they haven't got loads of players playing at top level sort of clubs. And it's difficult, I think, for someone like Alfonso Davies to like dominate a World Cup. And that's what he's going to have to do in terms of for Canada. He's going to have to dominate that midfield. And then they've got to get the service to Jonathan David. If they can do that, then they will be competitive. But it's more a case, really, with when I tipped them to finish bottom on Saturday when I went on Racing Post Live, it's more the fact that I like Morocco, and I've explained why earlier on in the preview. In terms of this game against Belgium, Belgium would be one of them teams that I would probably be against long-term in the World Cup. But when man of the match markets are available, Kevin De Bruyne would be an obvious shout for this. There was none about at the moment, so I just thought De Bruyne to score first. Lukaku is struggling for fitness at the moment. De Bruyne plays in that front three for Belgium rather than in midfield. And, you know, I think that basically if Belgium are to go well at this World Cup, they need Courtois to have the month of his life. They need De Bruyne to have the month of his life. They are capable of doing that. And De Bruyne, I think, can set them on their way against Canada. But like I say, longer term, I'd probably be against them in the other two group games.
Okay, great stuff. Let's move on to Thursday fixtures. That's Wednesday's all ticked off. And we'll start with the early game, 10 a.m. Switzerland against Cameroon. Another really exciting prospect, this. And Switzerland, Mark, maybe a side that are being overlooked a touch.
In my opinion, well, of course it's my opinion, that's why I'm speaking. But a lot of people in the pullout, as you mentioned, were sweet on Serbia as like the dark horses. Personally, I would prefer Switzerland in this group. I just think that there isn't it sounds a bit cliche to go, there's an efficiency about the way the Swiss go about it. But look, they've got a good record. I mean, they reached the quarterfinals of the Euros. Xhaka's, how well is he playing for Arsenal? And then Okafor is somebody that's different to what they had at the last Euros. I think it gives them a forward threat. Played for Salzburg, terrorised Italy in World Cup qualifying, which, you know, Switzerland finished above Italy in World Cup qualifying. They knocked France out of the last Euros. Mm. This is not a team to rubbish. Akanji and Shah at the back, you know, played for Manchester City and Newcastle. They're in the top four of the Premier League at the moment. Jan Sommer, fantastic goalkeeper. I've no idea how come he's still, at Borussia Mönchengladbach. Makes no sense. That he hasn't moved on to bigger and better things, but how good he is. Maybe not quite as clever with his feet as your Alissons of this world, and that's held him back as slightly. But I think they're a good underrated team. I would also say just about Cameroon that they've got some players that are definitely interesting. And Mbeumo of Brentford, you've got Aboubakar and Choupo-Moting. Up front, Choupo-Moting's been scoring a lot of goals for Bayern Munich, and in midfield, Anguissa for the Napoli player. Didn't show his best at Fulham, definitely is for Napoli. I was looking at this game thinking, and I don't think I've ever said this about Switzerland before, I fancy overs. I'm going to go for over 2.5. The market is anticipating a low-scoring game. I understand why, but Cameroon, all their qualities in the final third, and I think this Swiss team can surprise.
Ah, very good. I'm glad there's excitement around that game. Thursday, 1 o'clock, Uruguay against South Korea. We've mentioned Uruguay a few times in this podcast already, Mark, and you seem to like the look of them.
Yeah. I mean, well, they've got a lot of players playing at a very high level, and you know, you have got that experience you mentioned there in terms of the Centurions. Suarez 134, Cavani 133, Muslera 133, Godin 159 caps, Casares 115. That's pretty good going, isn't it? In terms of experience. And even when you look sort of further down there, like Valverde's got 44 caps. Bentancur is in the 50s already. This is one of them games that kind of makes or breaks the first round of World Cup betting for me, because I rate Uruguay higher than the market does, and I think South Korea are worse than the market thinks. So you can see which way I'm going here, and that's for a Uruguay win. I mean, South Korea finished comfortably behind Iran in Group A, the final qualifying in Asia. Son is going to play, but in a mask, and I don't care what anybody
says. Oh, so that's
confirmed,
is it? Son will be playing.
Well, he said he's available. Yeah, he said he's available to play in a mask. I mean, that's best case scenario, is he plays in a mask. And I don't think he's played that well for Tottenham this season, even when he didn't have a mask on. And that, for me, I looked at the... they've got the brilliantly named Jae Sung Lee, for those of a certain vintage who remember fantasy football. But outside of Son, and they've got Kim, the centre-half who plays for Napoli, rest of the team just doesn't look up to much to me at all.
And in terms of group betting, Mark, I've seen a fair few people now tipping up Uruguay to win the group. Now, obviously, the big threat's Portugal, but would you be along those lines as well?
Yeah, but I think if you fancy Uruguay to win the group, you might as well back them outright, because they'll end up in the easier half of the draw as it's expected to work out. And, you're getting... you're not getting an amazing price on the market. I say amazing. I mean, you're getting two to one to win the group. You might as well back them at 50s outright, and then you've got 25 to one about them winning a couple of games. Or certainly, if you are backing them to win the group, then do back them to win outright as well. Otherwise, where's the fun in that?
Quite right. Portugal, we just mentioned them. They're up against Ghana in their opener. how do we rate Portugal going into this? I mean, all the headlines have been... headlines that they probably don't want around Cristiano Ronaldo's interview with a certain man, and it just feels all a bit messy.
How can you? I struggle to have less respect for him after what he's done.
Can I describe him as a petulant child on air? Is that a bit harsh?
Yeah, I know, that's fine. And okay, I mean, it's who he gave the interview to as well. That says a lot about Cristiano Ronaldo, in my opinion. He's one of the greatest players that's ever played the game, and he scored 117 goals in 191 caps. So I don't think you can drop him. I think Fernando Santos, the coach, has got no option but to keep him in that team. But there is a question mark as to whether he's more of a hindrance than a help, particularly when you look at some of the other options that they've got that could play there. Rafael Leao could play through the middle. João Félix could play through the middle. Gonçalo Ramos at Benfica had a great Champions League. He's somebody, and he's got 9 goals in 11 games as well for Benfica in the league this season. A kind of burly centre forward, that can get around the pitch. But I still don't think you can drop Ronaldo. I think the confusion comes, but you look at the team and you go, well, look, they've got Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva in midfield, Diaz and Cancelo at the back with Nuno Mendes, who plays for Paris Saint-Germain. A lot of good things there. There are. And
James,
your colleague James Milton fancies Portugal outright. And I wouldn't want to sort of lay them. And they're not a team I think, they're absolutely terrible. But I am going to oppose them in this game against Ghana. I think that they're too short to win, don't score enough goals, perennial team that have just struggled in just about every game they play. They're almost better, it feels like, as when they're up against a team of their level rather than when they're expected to force the issue. And Ghana, you can just scrub off everything you've you've seen about Ghana over the last few years, because Chris Hughton has gone in there in sort of technical advisory role, and has just been crazily sort of bringing in like loads of you know players from you didn't know were Ghanaian and maybe been holding out for other sort of teams. So I'm thinking, you know, Lamptey, the Brighton right back, or Inaki Williams up front, and then you go through the team. You know, Amati and Salisu at centre half. Thomas Partey, one of the reasons Arsenal are top of the table so far. Kudos, the Ajax player, caught the eye in the Champions League at least early on. Sulemana plays for Rennes, and you remember the other week I said Rennes were the sexiest team in France. You know, he plays a role in that. And I just think they've got quite a lot of players that are a decent level and maybe going under the radar. And if there is to be an upset in the overall group, if maybe Portugal are having problems in the camp, then I think Ghana could take advantage.
I'm glad
you're one. I would just say though, goalkeeping wise, they've got a lot of problems. So that they're ended up. I think the guy that's going to play is from St. Gallen, and there was even talk of the one who was at Charlton, his name escapes me. He was set to play and got injured. So that would be the concern as to whether I've never heard of the guy that from St. Gallen.
Lawrence Atizigi, is that the one?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, lap of the God stuff there. But at the prices, I'm prepared to take a chance.
I'm really glad you mentioned Chris Hughton. I'd completely forgotten his involvement with Ghana. And as you say, exciting times for them. Brazil fancied by many, Serbia fancied by a few. They face each other Thursday at 7 o'clock. A difficult, a kind of banana skin, we'll call it, for Brazil in their opener.
Yeah, it is because of what Serbia have got. You know, they pack a punch up front. I don't know if Serbia have got the defence, though, to keep out Brazil. And actually, because Serbia are being highly fancied in parts, I think Brazil, you know, in terms of the accumulators, and we'll get onto them later, I think they're okay to put in you know, the last game of the first group stage. In terms of a bet for this one, I was looking at Vinicius to score first. I saw it was a bit of 8-1 knocking around. Now, it doesn't often go off at 8-1, but he's obviously up against Neymar and Rafinha, and one of Richarlison and Gabriel Jesus, whoever plays up front for Brazil. But Vinicius is just one of those players that I think is underrated in the kind of goal scorer markets, just consistently. I don't quite know why. You know, he gets his fair share for Real Madrid. He's definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, he's improving. I think he's kind of final outcome, if you like. And yeah, he just, Neymar's the obvious place to look for that first goal scorer as far as Brazil are concerned. But outside of him, I didn't see why he was a bigger price than you know, Gabriel Jesus, who doesn't score as often as what he should do, but has many other quality attributes. Richarlison not scored in the Premier League this season. So you know, that would be an issue there. And Rafinha gets chips in with goals, but I don't see him as being more of a threat than Vinicius out on that left hand side. So yeah, I'll go for Vinny Jr. to get the opening goal.
Okay, brilliant. Well, I hope you've scrawled your notes down at home. That will take you right the way through to our next episode of Bets Club. Each and every game previewed there. Time for a few of Mark's best bets to wrap things up. And we'll start with your player prop shot, Mark.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for a tournament player prop shot.
Okay.
And Alexis Vega to top score in terms of Mexico. So for him to be the top Mexican scorer, double figure odds available. I already had him in my mind before he scored in the last two friendlies. So the fact he scored in them, you know, just gives me a little bit more confidence. But it wasn't needed. Fourth most shots in the Mexican League this season. He's been linked with Brighton and also Real Madrid in dispatches. A winger that will play in that front three. He'll be on one side. It'll be Lozano on the other. And it'll be Raul Jimenez up front. Jimenez's favourite in this market. I think he's a vulnerable favourite for pretty obvious reasons. You know, he's somebody that just hasn't come back to his best form since, you know, that horrific head injury that he suffered. And, you know, I'm not even sure, even if he starts the tournament, whether Mexico can carry him if he plays to the level he was for Wolves. So when we've got a vulnerable favourite, that always is the kind of betting market I like. Lozano was the breakout sort of winger for Mexico at the last World Cup. I think Vega's the one this time around.
And if we've got ties in terms of top scorers for individual teams, how's that going to be settled?
Yeah, that'll be dead heat applied, certainly with the bookmakers that I've seen a betting on top Mexican scorer. So, at sort of 12, 14 to 1, even the dead heats, not a bad return.
Absolutely. How about a long shot for the tournament?
Yeah, so, well, in terms of the tournament, I was sort of thinking, should I put up something in the sort of outrights? And I think probably at this stage I will. And I think Uruguay are the ones for me in that respect. So if you do want that. But my idea of a long shot is just something that can give you fun at a big price, Jack. And look, Argentina to win the World Cup, Lionel Messi to be the top goal scorer, is 40 to 1.
Seems big, doesn't it? Yeah.
It just looks like, feels like it goes hand in hand. It never goes hand in hand. It's not the way it works. But 2002, that World Cup that you mentioned, Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo, he did the double. He won the World Cup. He was top scorer. I think Messi is capable enough. And if you fancy Messi to be the golden boot winner, if you fancy Argentina to win the World Cup, like at much bigger odds, why would you not have a couple of quid on both?
Absolutely. Now, we're coming into this tournament with nice form in terms of the treble, Mark.
Yeah, two
winners in a row. So how lovely it would be if we can get third in the first week of World Cup action.
Yeah, let's hope so. So first up, you know, probably my most confident selection, and we'll get to the nap soon enough, but it is going to be, Uruguay, but they're playing sort of later on in the week. So if I do it in chronological order, Tuesday, 10 a.m., Argentina to beat Saudi Arabia and over 1.5 goals. You can actually get it to around about sort of a more backable price. You know, they're what, fives on or something like that in the match market. So if Argentina win, like I would expect them to cut loose. So we're going to go for Argentina to beat Saudi Arabia and over 1.5 goals. So that's the Tuesday game. And then you do have to be patient and wait for Thursday for Uruguay to beat South Korea, hopefully. And then the final game of the first round of matches. We'll all be exhausted by Thursday, 7 o'clock. But I'm wondering now if Serbia being slightly overrated in the markets. I think Brazil deserve to be tournament favourites, and they can begin with a bang by beating Serbia. So Argentina to beat Saudi Arabia in over 1.5 goals, Uruguay to beat South Korea, and Brazil to beat Serbia.
I think the theme of this podcast, Mark, has been patience and fun. I think they're two very good things to have in life, aren't they?
You'd rather that than be miserable and impatient. Although they probably go hand in hand, don't they, to some extent?
Absolutely. So we have spoken a lot this podcast. What is your strongest bet for the next week?
It's Uruguay to beat South Korea. And the amount of times you go into a major tournament and you're like, oh, you know, I want to be with them, I want to be against them, and then when they play each other on that first game, it always feels like it's such a massive moment in sort of your whole sort of analysis of the tournament that's taken place over the last 6 months or however long it is you've been studying it. I mean, this basically is, you know, a team that I think is flying under the radar against one that, in my opinion, is overrated. And that South Korea team just doesn't look very strong to me. And it's funny, the South Korean sports editor, because we've got a South Korean website, he sat next to me in the office today. And I walked past earlier on, and he was on a call with you know, the team that's based in Korea and Japan. And I actually heard him say to all of them, South Korea are getting no points at this World Cup, and their faces dropped. And I think that the supporters are expecting more, but you know, I respect his opinion. He follows the Korean team closely, and I agree with him. I think that this is a tough group for them, and Uruguay to get off to a winning start, hopefully with a couple of goals for Nunez along the way as well.
That'd be brilliant. Well, there we go, Mark. Thanks so much for your insight in terms of the first week of fixtures and the outrights as well. As I said at the top of the show and mentioned throughout, well worth getting your hands or and eyes on the World Cup betting guide. I'm going to include a link in the description of this podcast for you to buy the PDF version. It's 80 pages, packed of goodness, well worth a read. So you feel fully researched going into the start of the tournament on Sunday. Mark, up. What's the kind of prep work now for the rest of the week? You just sit back and relax to enjoy the show.
Right. So I'm doing a corporate gig this afternoon talking about the World Cup. I'm then doing a radio preview for RTE. I'm then going straight from that to the Guardian live show where I've got a section.
What's this
their
all
World
today?
All today on Thursday.
Oh my goodness.
And then on Friday. I'm taking the car to be MOT'd and serviced, so it's out of the way before the World Cup starts. So, a lot of hard work's gone in from a lot of people on this desk at Racing Post. So hopefully, they can just have a couple of days where it's not quite so manic. And then once we get into the World Cup, I've mentioned it a few times already, Jack, but I love the World Cup. The idea of like Japan playing Costa Rica at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, that to me is what the World Cup is all about. And you'll struggle to get a hold of me when we're not doing. We're gonna have to find the time to do Bets Club next Thursday. Are you available at 5 a.m?
It sounds like I'm gonna have
maybe
to
not maybe not, but you gonna enjoy it?
Oh, I'm buzzing. I'm absolutely buzzing. I've fully invested. I think with other World Cups, as I say, it's been in the summer and I've maybe missed games because I'm out and about, or I've been at, I don't know, jobs that I can't maybe get fully stuck in with. But this one, I'm going to be in the house the majority of the time, able to catch 99% of the games. My Panini sticker collection is nearly there. I've thrown myself into every preview I can possibly read and watch. So I feel good going into it, and I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. Because the last couple of weeks, I found the weather's turned, the nights are getting really short. What else is there to do other than getting stuck into,
By the
South
time
Korea
it's all
football.
Over, it'll be Christmas. So this month's going to whiz by.
Really looking forward to it. We must say that Mark's put up a lot of selections, a lot of bets during this podcast. And please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. Enjoy the next week of World Cup action. We'll be back on Thursday to preview the next round of fixtures. Until then, stay safe and enjoy. See you later. Bye-bye.